And good morning and welcome to good afternoon. I will actually get that right one of these days. We moved to the afternoon where we used to be in the morning. I am Dave Taffet. I'm here in the studio with the late Patty Fink and Lauren Landis. And our guests today are from the group Out to Enroll, Katie Keith, who flew in from Washington, D.C. just to be on our show for no other reason whatsoever today, and Kellen Baker, who's from New York but flew in from Los Angeles because that was just the convenient way to get here. Welcome.
Thank you. We're happy to be here.
Now, what we're going to talk about is the Affordable Health Care Act and Obamacare, and we want to remind people that guns don't kill people, but affordable health care does, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's the way to think about it. You're here today for an event, and joining you is Gautam Raghavan. He'll be here. His plane doesn't get until 2, where he was going to come on the show, too. Do you know who he is, Lauren?
No.
He is the White House liaison. He works in the White House. He's the White House LGBT liaison. He'll be here later this afternoon, and all of us will be at Cathedral of Hope this afternoon at the Peace Chapel, and that's at 5910 Cedar Springs, talking to individuals. There'll be navigators there. Our Out to Enroll people will be there to answer all kinds of questions. So if you have, and specifically geared toward the gay and lesbian community, but if we have people who are listening, and we always do, who are not from the gay and lesbian community, if you have questions and want help with enrolling, come on over to Cathedral of Hope. It's in the building that's right across from the main cathedral, but you'll see people walking into that building, and get your questions answered. So I'm speaking right that you can answer straight people questions too, right?
We try.
Okay.
We try.
So what are some of the biggest questions that you've gotten? Because you've been doing this for a while now and answering the same old dumb, I mean, no dumb question, just my questions are dumb usually, right?
Right.
Yeah, okay. What are some of the same old questions that you're getting over and over and over again?
Sure. Well, I think the biggest one that we would want to push to people is that the deadline is coming up. People don't actually even realize that there is a deadline. Mm-hmm. I think only 55% of Americans know that you have to get covered by March 31st. So that's something we're certainly trying to get out there and inform people of. We get a lot of questions about transgender health. We get a lot of questions about, you know, can my same-sex partner and I enroll in a family plan? You know, can we all be on the same insurance together? And so these are sort of the examples and the types of questions we'll actually be going into detail today. We're really here in Dallas, and we kind of have a road show at Out to Enroll. We've been in Nashville and Tulsa, and we just really, really wanted to come to Dallas, so we're thrilled to be here. But just going around talking about what the Affordable Care Act includes for LGBT people.
Okay, so let's go with a couple of those questions.
Sure.
Let's start with a family plan. Can Patty and I, because we're a family, can we enroll together?
So it really depends on the insurance company, mm-hmm. because actually that's pretty much determined usually by what kinds of plans the insurance companies want to make available. But what we do know from the Affordable Care Act is that there were many folks who were legally married, and being told by their insurance companies as they were purchasing plans under the Affordable Care Act that they weren't able to enroll as a family. And just recently, the Department of Health and Human Services has issued some guidance clarifying actually that the Affordable Care Act does protect the ability of people who are legally married, whether they're different sex or same sex, to be able to enroll in family coverage under the law.
So if a person's trying to sign up as a family and get enrolled, maybe it's just their partner or, excuse me, their spouse, and maybe some kids too, that's not an acceptable answer they should get. They should be able to get full coverage for their entire family together.
Exactly. The Affordable Care Act is here for everybody. And I think that actually goes to one of the questions that we really do hear often as well, which is just what does the Affordable Care Act have in it for LGBT people? Because there's, as Katie was mentioning, there's a lot of gaps in information about what some of the major pieces of the law are as far as the deadline to get covered and other things. And there are a lot of those big questions about, well, this law doesn't really look like it's for us. It doesn't really look like it's for our LGBT community. But actually, it is. And Katie brought up some of the points that really touch on LGBT people's lives and what we need.
So the caveat is you still have to be married. Mm-hmm. You just can't be a live-in partner.
So there are two levels when it comes to getting coverage through the marketplace. The first is the question of the tax subsidies, right, that make it more affordable for folks to enroll. And you have to be legally married in order to get those tax credits calculated together. Legally married anywhere, doesn't matter where you live. So you can be married in Maryland and live in Texas, for example. And then the second question is, well, what kind of coverage can you buy with those subsidies? And you have to be legally married, again, in order for the federal government to say to any insurance company, you must cover this couple the same as you cover any other couple. But actually, the vast majority of plans already offer some kind of partner coverage or family coverage, making it possible for folks who are in a domestic partnership or other relationship to buy coverage together.
And actually, those partner benefits are very limited in Texas by state law. So most partners in Texas have not been able to access that unless you work for a larger corporation that has the power to tell the insurance company, go yourself. We are going to cover our gay and lesbian employees who have partners.
But if you work for the city of Dallas, if you work for
DART. That's a good example.
So many of our local governmental entities, you can, because we've been working very hard as a community over the years to get
right.
that.
And if you work for a company that's not based in Texas.
Well, or companies that are, like AT&T or Raytheon or, you know, any of those that have been real, groundbreakers in passing and implementing same-sex benefits as well as protections. But if you're just an individual going out to get health care as partners, you can't, unless now you're married. And we're married in, a state like one county in Oklahoma or a couple of counties in New Mexico. Now anywhere in New Mexico, all around us, so, not so hard to go and get married anymore. And which is why I think they're changing some of these, and soon in Texas because our law was just overturned too.
Let's talk about the deadline, which is, again, it's March 31st. Mm-hmm. If you don't make that deadline, you possibly will. Be penalized with on your taxes for next year. Does that also mean that after the deadline, you cannot sign up for insurance for the rest of the year?
Correct. So until the next period. So every year, sort of, and for those of you that get coverage through your employer, you're going to be familiar with this, where every year there's sort of a 30-day window that you can shop.
Like an open enrollment period?
Exactly. That's exactly what it's called. And so after March 31st, you're not going to be able to enroll until the next enrollment period. There are some let's be clear, there are some
exceptions.
So if basically major life changes. So if you get married, if you have a child, if you get divorced, there's a death in your family, all of these things, even if your income changes mm-hmm. in a way that maybe now you're eligible
New
for
job.
Financial help. Exactly. So any of these sort of major life things, that's an opportunity to always be able to go and shop and enroll.
Okay.
But if you just were sort of looking at your watch and didn't realize the deadline was coming or didn't, and nothing changes, you're not going to be able to really get that opportunity again until November 15th of this year.
And then that won't go into effect till next January.
Exactly. That's
so
exactly right.
Is that going to be, is March 31st going to be the usual deadline every year?
No, that's a great question. So for next year, this year we had 6 months. Mm-hmm. We started in October and we're ending in the end of March. Basically, for coverage for next year, for 2015, it'll go November 15th to February 15th.
Oh,
so it'll only be 3 months.
So it's going to be shorter.
Yeah, so it's going to be just as important. I mean, even for folks that kind of missed this deadline, we're, out to enroll. All these other groups you've been hearing about are still going to be out there hitting the pavement, trying to tell people about this because, it's not that far. November's not that far away.
So we got two deadlines now to worry about. We got the April 15th for our taxes. And we have now, you said February?
Yeah, for next year.
But once you have your insurance.
Right.
If you're, and I hate, one of the things that just drives me nuts is this. Well, I thought if you're happy with your insurance, you could keep it. Nobody's happy with their insurance. These insurance companies are criminal organizations. We know that. They are stealing us blind. We know that. However, if you do get sick, they will cover. Unless you're me, and then you have to threaten to sue them, and then they cover. But that's a whole other story. I always have terrible luck with
But you know why that was, though?
Yeah, because it's me.
No. Just you. But the reason that, you know, the whole conversation about you could keep your insurance, and then some people were losing it, was because the standard of what's included
exactly.
in these policies sucked.
Right. Well,
and so if you put in one standard that says this is the minimum you have to include in your policy, there were thousands, tens of thousands of policies out there and people covered under them who were not getting the basic minimum that should be in a policy.
So in a way, they kind of did those people a favor.
Oh, yeah.
The Republicans had out an ad. And this ad was, and I'm going through cancer treatment and I lost my coverage. Well, once they went back and got her covered at a lower cost, her new policy covered a lot more than her old policy did. And that's the example of it. In some cases, like with my company, there were one or two things that we weren't getting. But we buy through – our company buys our insurance through an agent. So the agent said, okay, this exact same policy is not available. Had we bought it as individuals, they might have canceled it because, again, these insurance companies are just run by thieves. And what they should have done was just for each and every one of these people whose policies they canceled, they should have said, your new policy will cost this amount and now includes this. Why didn't they do that?
It's a good question. And I think the one thing I want to flag for people right away is that for the majority of people, and as we're going around the room and you're talking about it, people that get their coverage from their job, this is not really about you. I mean, just to be clear, you know, this is really the law was passed in 2010, and it was passed to help the 50 million uninsured people that were living in our country. And so
Most of them in Texas,
California, Florida. That is really who we're talking about. And so it's really about those people that didn't have coverage before and how can we sort of get them into the system, whether it's through Medicaid or through subsidies. So even if you get it through your job, you know, there's a lot of sort of blaming on Obamacare. Oh, this change or this price increase or this is because of, but really that's not what the law is designed for. It's really designed for this segment of the population. So people, we want to go out and purchase their own policy for themselves, not through their company at all. In terms of the policy cancellation issue that we've been talking about, it is a tough issue. And I think for those people, we're saying that it's because the standards weren't up to snuff. And for a lot of those people that are really complaining about it, they were healthy, so they never needed to use it, so they never found out that it wasn't up to snuff. If those same people had gotten healthy, or had gotten sick, if they'd had cancer, if they'd gotten in a car accident, if they'd really needed that insurance, they might have a different outlook on what the Affordable Care Act is doing. And that's really where how the law affects you really depends on who you are, where you live, where you get your coverage. It's a lot of what ifs. And so again, those are sort of the kinds of questions we want to be able to delve into at the event in even more detail and sort of learn the individual questions that people have.
You just hit on something that we were talking about before the show, misconceptions. Mm-hmm. You said something, purchase. This is designed for people to help purchase their own plans. Right. That is one of the biggest misconceptions I think that is out there.
It's a big giveaway by big government.
That Obamacare is free health care. It is not. Can you talk a little bit about that? It is not.
The Affordable Care Act is based on private insurance, just like the system that we already had in place before the law. It's just that before the law, as we've been talking about, there were very few standards to protect those of us who had insurance coverage, whether through our jobs or whether it was something we were purchasing for ourselves. And so what the law tries to do is to open the ability of people to enter into this private market that's already out there, that is already something that has been championed by folks on the right and the left for many years now. And so when you look at the health insurance marketplaces, again, just an opportunity for plans to put their information up side by side, mm-hmm. folks to be able to look at prices and make a decision about which plan they want to purchase, to go mm-hmm. back to that important word.
Yeah, and even though it is a purchase, there is financial help available. So that's the other thing that people don't realize. Kellen and his colleagues at Center for American Progress did some research, and LGBT people in particular, 62% of them know about the mandate. They know they have to have coverage, but less than a third knew that there's financial assistance available. So people are also under this impression that I have to buy this thing that I can't afford, and there's nothing there that's going to help me. And so, I think it's lots of people, especially very low-income people, are getting policies for under $100. Mm-hmm. And so that might not be everybody, but we would just really encourage people to consider their options
right.
and at least get online and check it out.
And as much as I'm saying, you know, my policy doesn't cover, this year actually I changed doctors, so and not because of my health coverage. It was just my doctor. Actually, well, long story about how Blue Cross put my doctor out of business, but and he did, they did. But so I needed a new doctor, and so we did a bunch of tests and other things, and having trouble reading close all of a sudden. So I went to the eye doctor. My eye exam was actually covered. I never expected that, and my old policy didn't cover that. It does now. That's part of the standard. So your glasses aren't covered unless you have a special eyeglass policy. I always thought, and actually this probably is the way it was before, you had to buy the eyeglass policy for just a standard eye exam to be covered. That was covered under my policy. All of the tests, everything I did, no, because it was a first general physical of the year, no copay. Which before I was paying a copay. I was paying last year, I think it was like a $50 copay. That's gone. Now my copay is actually a $40 instead of $50. I'm trying to think what else, because there were several other things that it was like, and my out-of-pocket for the year went down by half. Again, because of the new standards that are in there in the law.
Yeah, and it goes back to what Patty was saying about the establishment of new standards for how comprehensive these plans need to be. Because as we were talking about earlier, the Affordable Care Act is for folks who did not have insurance, but it was also for people who were underinsured, who found out when they got sick or when they got hurt that they had actually what is frequently referred to as Swiss cheese coverage, mm-hmm. full of holes. And the Affordable Care Act actually establishes this requirement that plans need to offer a certain number of services across a range of healthcare areas, mm-hmm. such as many that are important for LGBT community members, for example, mental and behavioral health services, prescription drugs, walking into your doctor's office and needing a physical or needing, you know, whatever kind of healthcare it is. And that is actually one of the biggest changes that we'll see, because it's not just about coverage, it's about actually utilizing that coverage to get the health care that we need.
Right. Speaking of things that are full of holes, I'm David Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink and Laurent Landis. This is Lambda Weekly that you're listening to. We're talking to Kellen Baker and Katie Keith, who are from Out to Enroll, and we'll be back with more right after this.
April 13th at the historic Sons of Herman Hall. It's a Sunday afternoon of music from the Hash Brown Blues Band, Mike Stinson, Houston Marchman, and of course, those great big bowls of red. Over 20 teams will compete for an automatic bid to the 2014 International Chili Cook-Off in Terlingua. This is a sanctioned event. Talbert's rules apply. This is an open cook-off. To register your chili team, call 214-828-9500, extension 224, or email pippin@knon.org. Tickets are available at knon.org and Talbert's in Grapevine. That's the inaugural KNON Chili Cook-Off and Concert Sunday, April 13th at the Sons of Herman Hall with the Hash Brown Blues Band, Mike Stinson, and Houston Marchman. Doors at 3, music at 4. The Sons of Herman Hall is located at 3414 Elm Street in Dallas. This is a KNON benefit event brought to you by Chase's Place, Gold Teeth Music, Republic Tequila, and Talbert's in Grapevine.
Many families live on the edge where a repair or an illness can leave them homeless. The Collin County Samaritan Inn provides a comprehensive program that helps people gain dignity. The inn holistically guides those in need towards independence caused by crisis. A safe, clean place with 3 meals a day, clothing, shower, laundry, security, and supervision. Separate living areas for men and women, and private living areas for parents with small children. If you are seeking shelter or know someone who is, the number is 972-542-5302. If you are interested in volunteering, 972-632-1290, extension 228. Online, thesamaritanin.org.
Hi, I'm Cleve Jones, and you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM.
And I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink, with Laron Landis, and our guests are Katie Keith and Kellen Baker from Out to Enroll. And we're talking about the Affordable Care Act and how Obamacare is going. No. That I keep going to my Fox gig. Yeah.
Now, let's steer people in the right direction.
Oh, okay, in the right direction.
Let's try.
That's right. This is the show where we talk about actual facts, not made-up stuff. Okay. So, Patty.
Well, I just wanted to point out something that I think is missed in a lot of this conversation, and that is, people grumble about the Affordable Care Act and what's offered under it, but we have to remember that had it not been in place, our premiums, certainly as those who are insured through their employers, would be skyrocketing again, because we've seen it year over year over year, our premiums that are deducted from our checks every month. I mean, so for the person who's like normally, kind of quote normal, insured through their employer, kind of the traditional American way, we've been paying through the nose. And so, without this Affordable Care Act in place, we forget what it could be. And it's really put stanched the bleeding, I think.
One other area that we're benefiting here in Dallas County, we have a county hospital that we finance through our county tax. Do you know how many people go through that hospital who are from Collin County, where they can well afford to help pay for it, and they don't pay one damn penny to contribute to Parkland Hospital or to all of the other surrounding counties other than Tarrant? Tarrant has the same problem with John Peter Smith, and all of the counties surrounding them don't contribute one penny. If you can't afford anything else and you go to Parkland or you go to JPS, that county is paying for your medical care. So this is a good case of the people in Plano who feel so entitled in the most Republican county in the country, where I'm sure they're completely against so-called Obamacare. How many of their people are they sending to our hospital for us to pay for? This should help Dallas County a whole lot.
And, you mentioned before this Affordable Care Act was designed for those 50-plus million folks who did not have any insurance. But for those of us who have insurance through our employers, talk to us a little bit about is there an opportunity for us to drop our employer-covered insurance if we wanted to and go through healthcare.org?
Sure. So there's a couple of things there. And so I think that's right, that it's really sort of those 50 million that it's targeted at. I'll give you a couple things that do apply to the employers, and then I'll answer your question about dropping coverage, because I think it's a great question. The first thing is that whole ban on those nasty little things we call pre-existing conditions exclusions, that applies to everybody. Mm-hmm. So there have been.
That's just brilliant.
Yeah.
That's just wonderful.
You want insurance to work for sick people. It's not really valuable if it works only for healthy people.
Exactly.
So that's, that's the whole point, right? So that's the first thing that applies across the board. I hope some folks listening may have gotten those nice rebate checks from their insurance company. So I think, to Patty's point about it's sort of trying to keep costs down, some people might have gotten money.
We got back.
Oh, no. All right, well.
Well, I know other people who got a lot
more.
So that's another thing that sort of hits this employer market. Some of those standards are very much in place. There's something called an appeals process, and this sounds really wonky and maybe lame, but most people don't know this, that as soon as your insurance company denies coverage for something, you can appeal. And I think it's something like 80% of those claims, when you appeal them, are overturned. People just don't know to do it. And so now everybody sort of has access to that. So those are kind of some high things. To drop your coverage, the opportunity is certainly there, but there's a lot of financial implications that go along with that, because as many folks who have insurance from their employer know, most of the time your employer is paying part of that. And so if you do drop that coverage, depending on how much it costs you to get it, you might not be able to for that financial help that we've been talking about through the marketplace at healthcare.gov. And so you would have to be willing to say, I can afford to not take my, this basically the subsidy that my employer gives me and go and buy the insurance myself. But it's always an option. I think that's one of the other things that the Affordable Care Act does.
We were talking about several instances where somebody might be interested in that. Laron's employer changed coverers. Carriers. Carriers.
Yeah,
I got up real early today and flew up the highway from Austin, and I'm here, so I don't want to hear it.
We got you.
They changed carriers this year, and let's say your new carrier doesn't include your own doctor. Let's say the new coverage only covers generics, and you have a pre-existing condition where your doctor really wants you on a different medication. It might be worth it for you to change. The other one is if you're younger and have a very inexpensive policy, you might, you know, and have no anything, you might decide to opt out of their real premium policy and just take a low-cost policy for yourself.
Right.
You know, so there are some instances. In most cases, those are real specific things, though. In most cases, what you can't do is drop your employers and then get a subsidy.
That's exactly right.
So
you can always
right.
shop, but you might not be eligible right. for the financial help.
And you know something? People should shop because they might find themselves in a position where they're going to need to buy insurance. And instead of panicking about it, you know how the whole thing works.
So, and that is another thing that we're hoping that the Out to Enroll campaign and all of these conversations about the Affordable Care Act will help with, too, is this health insurance literacy. You were mentioning some of those words, copay, coinsurance, deductible. These are words that folks may have heard but may not know exactly how they apply to what money is coming out of their wallet and how to look at a policy and figure out what's covered. So this, the Affordable Care Act, I think, is opening up a lot of opportunities for people to learn more about what is in these policies, what we have the ability to expect from insurance companies, and how to, for example, as Katie was mentioning, take advantage of an appeals process and not just get the letter that says coverage denied and think, well, that's the end of it, because it's not the end of it. You can actually take that right and go back and say, you know what, I need something and you're not giving it to me, and we need to actually work this out.
Do you know what else we're appealing? We're appealing the cost of my coverage. What happened was because of they think I'm older, and they forgot to look on Facebook to see what my real age is, but which I can't change again this year. I'm going to actually turn 40 this year. Because there's a limit to the number of times you can change your age on Facebook. But because of my advanced age, my insurance went way up, and I have no pre-existing conditions, which was why mine was way down, and it was with a group. So everybody else in our company, their insurance went down. The company is actually paying 8% less this year than we paid last year, but we're actually challenging the cost of my insurance, because while they can't take pre-existing conditions into consideration to penalize you, they can look at it and just look at my health record and say, yeah, we don't need to be charging him that much, and they can lower it. So we're actually challenging that too.
And I think, just as we're saying, we have rights. You know, I would be very upset with myself if I left here and said that one of the main things in the Affordable Care Act for LGBT people is that there's no discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. I can't believe we haven't said that yet, but we should say that.
Right.
It's like one of the big, most important pieces of this is that the marketplaces, the plan, there can't be that kind of discrimination. So it's another right that people have, and they can take, you know, sort of put those complaints somewhere, and we can make sure that the law is working.
Can you talk a little about some of the specific needs of maybe what the transgender community might need in terms of medical needs? Because they... we know, but they have sometimes really challenges when it comes to the medical world.
Yeah,
a lot of transgender people, going back to the what we were mentioning with what's in your policy and what benefits are or are not covered, many transgender people may be more familiar than most with what's actually in their plans, because many trans people are familiar with going to a plan document and looking, and under the sections where it says exclusions, so the services that are not covered, one almost invariably finds an exclusion for transgender people for the healthcare that they need related to gender transition. And while that is extremely unfortunate in and of itself, because transition-related care is medically necessary, it is life-saving, but what's even worse is that these exclusions are frequently expanded in practice to include not just transition-related care, such as hormone therapy or mental health services, but also preventive screenings, such as mammograms or pap tests, or even any kind of care at all. We know stories from many of our legal services organizations of folks who have had a broken bone, who have had pneumonia, who have had a heart attack. And at the end of the day, the insurance company looks at their plan and says, because you are transgender, your entire life is a pre-existing condition. Your entire identity is excluded by this policy, so you cannot get coverage for the care that you need.
And so that's not the case now, right? Let's talk about what the case is now.
What the case is now, the Affordable Care Act, as we were mentioning, includes these incredible new non-discrimination protections that include both sexual orientation and gender identity. So as Katie was mentioning, the marketplaces, the health plans that are sold through them, the vast majority of plans outside of the marketplaces in the individual and small group markets may not discriminate against transgender people. The question of what exactly that means to say you cannot discriminate against a transgender person is really actually being answered by the states. There are several states now that have looked at their own state laws in the context of the Affordable Care Act and this opportunity that it brings up to talk about discrimination, and said, you know what, gender identity non-discrimination in an insurance context needs to mean no exclusions. So we're starting to see, you know, we were talking earlier about the difficulty that people in same-sex relationships sometimes have getting coverage, particularly, for example, here in Texas. And the Affordable Care Act offering an opportunity for that to begin to change. And that's really what's happening on the front with regard to the healthcare that transgender people need as well, and the coverage that trans people need. Is it's not changing overnight. The insurance industry is huge. The healthcare system is complex. But the Affordable Care Act is providing an opportunity for that kind of change to start to happen.
So what if you had a transgender person who had a policy before that excluded their whole life because they were transgender and they really liked that policy?
I doubt that trans person would really like that policy.
I'm just coming up, trying to find some example where somebody says, in any case whatsoever, I just really love my insurance policy.
Yeah.
I don't think that ever happened, ever.
Well, and I really love not being, you know, being a woman used to be, I think, mm-hmm. a pre-existing condition.
Yep.
That suddenly we were
paying
more. How much
did your insurance go down?
My insurance went down quite a lot. I would say over half.
Yeah.
We changed companies and everything. My company was purchased, and we went through a whole lot of change. And so I can't pinpoint where all of that reduction came from.
Mine stayed about the same, but they did send me a letter letting me know.
But you're not a woman.
But I have a family, and I have a kid, and
that's
they
true.
Let me know that I can add more kids if I like, and it won't change. I can add up to four more kids.
And you How does said, your husband feel about that?
I'm like, joy.
I think it's his husband who wants the four more kids.
Oh, not going to happen.
I see where the block is now.
Yeah, she's just turning 5.
Yeah.
She's still in her terrible twos.
Yeah,
But if you're a trans person in North Texas, you could come this evening and really learn some detail about what's available, what's included, what could be excluded, all of those things. So it's a great opportunity to come this evening to the Interfaith Peace Chapel at the Cathedral of Hope at Cedar Springs in Inwood. It's going to be from 5 to 6:30, right?
Yep.
5 to 6:30 p.m. this evening. Come as you are. It's a free event. Bring yourself and your questions.
Your tough questions, because we've heard a lot of different questions, and certainly trans people do have a lot of questions about what does this law mean, and we're very excited to have the opportunity to talk with folks about what it means for them.
And we're lucky on this event. We're partnered with the Transgender Education Network of Texas, Black Trans Men, Black Trans Women, and the Trans Pride Initiative. So mm-hmm. all those folks will be there, too, and we're trying to work really closely with sort of mm-hmm. local trusted organizations and frankly
wonderful.
Folks like you guys, because you're the trusted messengers.
You know, and one of the things I want to make clear is that, you know, a lot of people listen and say, oh, well, you know, transition surgery, that's not that important. The types of things that were excluded were somebody who's, say, male to female might not have had a prostate gland removed and got prostate cancer, and it is no longer covered because, oh, well, you're a woman, you can't possibly have a prostate gland. Well, but I do have cancer, and it was not covered.
Right.
I mean, that's how insidious these policies
and the testing
were.
To screen for it. You know, that's,
yep.
Those are big
right.
things.
Right, and there was a film that was popular.
Southern Comfort,
where there was a trans man, who a female to male, who had ovarian cancer, mm-hmm. and it wasn't covered, and he passed away. They wouldn't treat him. So
I have some questions texted to me. One is, are the website issues fixed? And how do I sign up?
Sure. So
great questions.
Yeah. No, the website is working much, much better. So for folks that try to sign up in October and November, I had nothing to do with it, but I will personally apologize to you. We had people, you know, they spent a lot of hours on the website trying to get coverage for January 1, especially people that really needed it. So it is working much better. The feds were working around the clock to get it there.
I've gone to it several times. Even when they were saying there were lots of problems, I went and didn't really have problems. But now I've gone several times. There's really no problem.
Great.
On the consumer end of it.
Yeah, right. And we've passed the 5 million mark of people who have gotten enrolled. And so, you know, it's been a lot of growth over January and February. And I think over this next week, a lot of folks expected to visit the website. And I think it is ready for that.
Yeah.
I wish I had the president on the line to back me up on that.
But healthcare.gov, by March 31st. I don't think we can say it enough.
And I've been by there a few times, just looking to see what's available.
Sure.
And there are different levels, and we can talk about that after the break. You know, bronze, silver, and gold. But I think there are some incredible choices out there that a lot of people think, wow, this is like the real deal, real insurance.
And that's the great thing, choices.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Choices.
Absolutely.
One of the reasons that our guests are here, we're going to take a break in a minute, but I just want to give you some statistics. In Texas, there are 5 million people who are uninsured. At least 300,000 have signed up through the marketplaces now. The number one congressional district out of 435 congressional districts in the country, the number one congressional district is District 33, Mark Vesey's district, with 38% of the population there uninsured. I know there are two others in between, but Eddie Bernice Johnson's is the number 14 with 30% who are uninsured. Plano, one of the wealthiest areas in the country, wouldn't you say?
Yep.
More than 20% uninsured in Sam Johnson's district up there. That's how bad it is in Texas. Do you know the number one district for most people insured?
In Texas?
No. Nationwide.
Oh. Where?
Take 435 guesses.
No. Go for it.
It is Kennedy. Joseph Kennedy's district has only 2% uninsured in Massachusetts. In fact, the top 10 congressional districts for people who are insured are in Massachusetts.
Wow.
Big surprise.
Yeah. And, of course, Massachusetts got out of the gate early with health insurance reforms that are very similar. In fact, the Affordable Care Act is modeled
right
on what happened in Massachusetts, and clearly it's
and
working.
Who signed that bill?
Romney.
Which is why he hates it.
Exactly.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON-FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Laron Landis and the late Patty Fink, and we'll be back with Katie Keith and Kellen Baker from Out to Enroll right after this.
KNON and Lone Star Dead Radio invite you to a premier benefit event Friday, May 2nd at Poor David's Pub, starring the legendary David Gans. A major festival mainstay, David Gans' career as a musician, journalist, and historian of all things Grateful Dead will be on display during this event. A free vegetarian dinner will be provided. This event will be broadcast live on the air. Come be part of the experience Friday night, May 2nd at Poor David's Pub. Poor David's Pub is located at 1313 South Lamar in the Cedars. Doors open at 7. Tickets available at KNON.org. Bills, Records, and Groovy Goods in Arlington. That's a live broadcast, phenomenal food, and the finger-picking improvisations of counterculture icon David Gans. Friday, May 2nd at Poor David's Pub. This is a KNON benefit event.
This is Raphael McDonald from Resource Center Dallas. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Laron Landis and the late Patty Fink. We are talking about enrolling people in healthcare with two people from Out to Enroll, Katie Keith and Kellen Baker. If you have more questions and you'd like to meet with them and with Gautam Raghavan, who is the LGBT liaison to the White House, they'll all be at Cathedral of Hope later this afternoon in the Interfaith Peace Chapel, 5 to 6:30. Any questions that you have, they're here to answer. And I'm here to prove that they'll even answer the stupidest questions.
And here's one. How does, if you have Medicaid and or Medicare, does that negate you having the need to have the Affordable Care Act? Or can you have all three? I mean, how does that work?
Sure, it's a good question. So really, you know, one of the things we've been talking about, you get enrolled by March 31st so you can avoid this penalty, you know, this fine that people have to pay. So if you already have coverage, whether it's Medicare, Medicaid, some kids have CHIP coverage, through your employer, through the VA, you know, there's all these different places that people get coverage. If you already have one of those, you're not going to get hit with that penalty. You're going to be fine.
Okay.
But at the same time, if you already have some of those sources of coverage, you're not going to be able to get financial help either when you go in and apply for the marketplace. So again, we're sort of, part of the law is really trying to get uninsured people insured. So it's we're less concerned if you already have Medicare, or you're over 65, or you're already in Medicaid.
Okay, here's one part of that though, and I'm concerned because Patty is getting on in age. With Medicare, Medicare Part A is the part that we all pay the Medicare insurance for, but I think it's Part B is the supplemental health that a lot of people take out that covers things that Medicare doesn't cover. Are there any subsidies for that based on income?
There are not, and that's a great question. And just to be clear, so those sort of Medicare supplemental plans, they're not actually being sold through the marketplace.
Oh, okay, so those aren't even available that way.
You won't see those. So folks over 65 that are shopping, and a lot of people have those plans. Same thing with Medicare Advantage plans. If folks have those, which is like the private version of Medicare, those aren't going to be at healthcare.gov.
Where do they find those then?
I think they don't have sort of the same clearinghouse, like a website like that.
So you find it advertised,
I guess. You do, exactly. Yeah. You're sort of going. Frankly, one of the things that the Affordable Care Act was supposed to help, so you don't have to go from Blue Cross to Anthem to Aetna, website to website to shop. And so maybe that's something that we'll be rolling out in the future through different legislation. But for Medicare, it's sort of a different system. So folks that are 65 and up or disabled or have that kind of coverage, you're going to be all set. You need to keep paying attention to your open enrollment period and making sure you're covered.
And when you first enroll for Medicare, they do advise you on all those things.
Right.
So you do have to read all the stuff that they send you because it is going to be different than people who are signing up through the marketplace.
Well, I think it's really interesting. My oldest sister, she's been kind of double whammied a couple of times. When she was getting ready to vote for the first time, you had to be 21. And then while she was waiting to be 21, and they changed it to 18. So her first time to vote, she was standing in line with, she was over 21 waiting for people, you know, waiting with people who were 18. And she's just in that age period where she had retired earlier than 65, but was unable to get insured except for astronomical amounts of money every month and every year for a catastrophic hospitalization policy because she couldn't even get covered. There was no chance for a person in their late 50s or early 60s to get coverage without being on Medicare, and yet she didn't reach that age yet. So she came right along, and just when the Affordable Care Act kicked in, she got Medicare. She got all But for many, many years was paying through the nose. And, you know, it's not like she was a poor person or destitute or something, but it was the cost was just ridiculously high to get anything. And if you don't have any kind of coverage, a lot of providers don't want to see you.
Right.
You know, so it's, you know, what a coup that this is all coming in now.
And that's one of the big cruxes of the health insurance marketplaces is that depending on how much money you make every month, you're eligible for greater, the less you make, the more assistance, financial assistance you get to help you afford coverage so that it's not just, you know, you're looking at these plans and thinking, well, how can I afford this? Because there is actually that financial help that is available.
Yeah, and Patty, I would just add, I think with all the politics, with all the millions of newspapers and all the bickering and the fight, that kind of story is exactly why this law exists. And I don't think we hear about that enough of why are we doing this? Why do we care? And it's because people can't even buy a product that they'd want to buy otherwise would save their life. And so thank you for sharing that because it's just, I think it's really hard for people to grasp if they're healthy or if they've never had a problem. But that's the point.
Okay, I had a question this week, and because I've been writing some about it, I'm getting these questions too. Somebody who's a teacher has resigned as of the end of this year, has a new job in September, but healthcare won't kick in till December or January next year with the new job. So in June or end of May, when her contract is up, that's a change of life event, right?
Exactly. So okay. She'll get a special enrollment period.
So she has a special enrollment period. She can even shop for it in May or April or May to kick in on June 1st. When she reports her income, at the point at which she resigns from her job, her income becomes zero because she's not entitled to unemployment. Her income is zero. Do you report your income for the year? What do you use as the basis for your income to determine what the subsidy would be?
It's a great question. So for this year, you're actually estimating what your 2014 income is.
So you're estimating your annual.
Right, okay. Exactly. For this year. Of course, going forward, they'll be able to look back at what your income was last year. But I think it raises a really good point that even people that sign up before March 31st, if there is a life change that maybe you get a new job and it pays a lot better or it pays a lot worse, you can always go back to healthcare.gov and say, hey, I got this great bonus or I got this big raise. Is this going to affect the financial help that I'm getting? Because what you don't want to happen is for your friend or the questioner to go back in April, right? Because they're going to square all this up at tax time. And so you don't want her to go back and say, oh, you know, well, I underestimated, and now I owe money back to the government.
Okay, so that was the other part that I was going to ask you. It's based on your income for this year or last year?
2014. So you're estimating what you would make in 2014.
In 2014. Mm-hmm. So at tax time, when you do your whole income, there'll be separate lines for how much of a subsidy did you receive, how much were you actually entitled to, and you either get it in return as more of a return or less of a return.
Yeah, I don't think any of us have seen that yet, but that's exactly what we're expecting. Yeah,
that's the plan.
They're going to square it up, exactly.
Yeah, okay.
And that is how the subsidies are paid. They're in the form of tax credits, advanced tax credits. So as Katie was saying, you estimate what your income will be for the year, and then when tax time comes around, you will pay less on the basis of whatever the subsidy is that you received.
And I think that's a really important thing for people to understand is that they can go ahead and get it, the insurance.
Exactly.
You know? And I think another big thing, too, that our country is about to face and maybe not grasping really very well is that all of these years and decades, we've been dealing in a healthcare system where we treat the sick. You know, so your insurance doesn't really kick in until something happens and you go. A lot of people weren't going for preventative care and forecasting what you might need. But it's a paradigm shift completely.
It really
because
is.
Because we're going to move to a place in the industry of wellness, well, where wellness is the goal. And so how do we deal with wellness? Well, we do preventative care, and we look out for you. And you can see it in some of the major healthcare providers in this area with ads talking about wellness. You know, you see people trying to urge you to take those stairs, not the escalator. You know, we have those kinds of ads on TV, and it's going to be a big shift to well-being. But I think that's a good thing. Because our system is broken. Our system has been broken because we've been treating the sick.
Right. And the LGBT community has a lot to gain from that. There are a lot of health disparities, and it's not the sexiest thing to talk about. Health insurance and health is not as sexy as marriage equality or non-discrimination, but I think we feel very strongly that health is an LGBT issue. Mm-hmm. And there, I think you're right. There's a lot to be gained, especially for this community.
Mm-hmm. And the other statistics that we have are that the LGBT community tends to be underinsured compared to the rest of the population. Why is that?
Well, at the Center for American Progress last year, we did some research looking specifically at LGBT people who are in those income ranges where they can get financial help to afford coverage. And we found, exactly as you're saying, that 34%, so more than one in three, of those LGBT community members were uninsured. And there are a variety of reasons for that. Katie mentioned marriage equality. One of the major ways that people get insurance is through their spouse's employer. And if you are not able to be in a legally recognized relationship, that jeopardizes your access to that kind of coverage. And we've heard a lot about, for example, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, right, in Congress right now, and about the employment discrimination that LGBT people experience. So often we are the last hired, the first fired, we're marginalized, pushed into jobs where we don't get benefits, we don't make enough to afford health care on our own, and that jeopardizes the second major way that people in this country tend to get coverage, which is through their employer. Mm-hmm. So if you have employment discrimination, you have relationship recognition discrimination, or relationship unrecognition, if you will, that really puts up some major barriers on those two important pathways that the majority of people get coverage through.
One of the ways that this act is supposed to help that won't in Texas because of that great American Rick Perry, is that we don't have Medicaid expansion. Explain how that's working in normal states and how it's not working in Rick Perry states.
I'll let the Texan take that question.
You know, it's a really tough thing. So I think I mentioned earlier we've been going on this road show and going out and doing the sort of similar town halls to the one that we're doing this afternoon. And we get questions from people in the audience. So somebody standing up and saying, I'm homeless. What do I do? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we tend to be going to states that aren't that also aren't expanding Medicaid. Mm-hmm. And the answer is nothing for folks like that. And so folks that are homeless, folks that are really kind of make less than $11,000 a year, their options are still pretty limited based on the state.
Fortunately, in Dallas, we have a county hospital.
Right.
And
right.
You know, we have that safety net, and we've had it for 100 years. And the reason that we do is because here we're a group of people, and the border is like 15 miles north of downtown Dallas, 15 miles. You know, it's we're one little square in the next county hospital is 200 miles away.
Well, and part of the Affordable Care Act, for better or for worse, actually reduces the funds that are available for those kinds of county hospitals, because the idea is that more folks are supposed to be able to get Medicaid so that there would be less need for these hospitals to provide care for which they don't get compensated. Mm-hmm. So Medicaid expansion is really, it's not just for the people who need that coverage. It is, as you point out, also for those facilities that provide this kind of care and need the support, need the reimbursements.
In our county, actually, County Commissioner's Court and the county judge are in favor of expanding it without the Rick Perrys of the state.
I know we're running out of time, but real quick, how can the Affordable Care Act help LGBT seniors? Because I know on average, LGBT seniors don't have children to help out, like, you know, heterosexual seniors who might have kids to help them out when they get older, you know, to help them out, you know, coming over, checking on them and so forth. Is there anything that in this that would help them out, maybe, you know, with assistance in maybe going to, like, you know,
in
nursing homes,
nursing care facilities,
something like that. Things like that?
Sure. So we don't, to be honest, we don't work a lot on that issue, but SAGE has a lot of great resources, and frankly, we talk about it on our website, which is out to enroll to with the number 2.org. And we do ask that question of what if I'm over 65 and I have Medicare and that kind of thing. So it's there. Again, some of what you're saying about long-term care and all those things, part of that is also Medicaid. Mm-hmm. It's not really part of the expansion, it's kind of a broader conversation that
we
I
had somebody
I'm
text
an attorney,
us,
so I won't bore you with it.
We had somebody text us with a question. What about Walmart people? The biggest employer in the country, notorious for not taking care of their employees, the most people on food stamps and government assistance are people who work for Walmart. How will this be helping them? Is Walmart being forced to provide some sort of health care to their employees?
Other than handing them a Medicaid application when they get a job.
Yeah, no, they're not being forced. We can start there. And so a lot of these protections, because Walmart is such a big employer, as you mentioned, not a lot of the same rules apply. I will say it sort of depends on what they're paying each individual and whether they're offering health insurance, whether those people, those employees, can actually go into the marketplace. It's sort of it's based on what their income is and how much of your income you would have to pay on health insurance. And again, something maybe we could talk more about today at the event and get into the details on that. But it's a great question, and I think it's going to depend on who you are and how much you get paid.
And one piece that I wanted to add to your question about what LGBT seniors can expect, one thing that comes to mind is that, as we were mentioning earlier, the Affordable Care Act really tries to put its money where its mouth is about the importance of prevention and wellness. So folks who are on Medicare can now get free preventive screenings every year, which is major as far as encouraging people to take care of themselves, as you were mentioning, Patty, to move from the sick care system to an actual health care system. Mm-hmm. And the other big thing for LGBT seniors is, and actually LGBT people in general, one of the first things that the Obama administration did for LGBT people in the realm of health was to implement new non-discrimination protections that allow, if you're in a hospital, if you're in a nursing home or any other kind of facility, that you have protections as far as who can visit you and who is considered part of your family, part of your caregiver system. And that is, it's not just actually for same-sex couples, it's really for anybody who has ever been worried about who would be able to hold their hand or who would be able to be there for them to visit them. And that predates, or sort of actually about the same time as the passage of the Affordable Care Act, but it is part of this broader conversation about what kinds of changes are we making to the healthcare system and how does the Affordable Care Act fit into that.
That's huge.
Yep, that's really, really huge.
Okay, so our senator has said that the Affordable Care Act is going to be killing more people than anything we could ever have imagined. Do we have any good, solid examples of people who are being killed by their new health coverage yet?
Crickets. Right? You're maybe shopping for those progressive, and you like pull the box down, it hits you on the head, maybe there. But overwhelmingly, you know, we have been all across the country, and we have heard all kinds of stories, and there are a lot of questions. This is a major undertaking. Mm-hmm. But we have heard so many incredible stories of people, LGBT and not, who needed health care, wanted the security of coverage, wanted to be able to take care, to protect themselves, their families, to be part of a healthier community, and that they have actually been able to get that coverage and to access that kind of security under the Affordable Care Act.
So Ted Cruz, you're saying, doesn't quite have it accurately, right?
You said it.
I said nothing.
I want to thank both
Katie
Keith and Kelly Baker. They flew in specially to be with us. They flew in early, but they will be here. And really, thank you for doing that. They'll be at Cathedral of Hope 5 to 6:30 this evening with Gautam Raghavan from the White House. And if you have any questions, please come by. It's going to be real casual talk. And just ask your questions. There'll be navigators there that can help you actually enroll. Even if you have insurance already, if you have questions, stop by. We'll see you next week with more Lambda Week.
KNON 89.3 FM in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people. Business owners, tell KNON's listeners about your business. You can put your business or event on KNON. KNON currently has space available to run announcements for you. Tell KNON's listeners about your goods, services, nightclub, concert, or event. Help keep the voice of the people on the air while putting your information on the air. KNON's been named the number one radio station in Dallas by both the Dallas Observer and D Magazine. Put your business with Dallas's number one station. Call now for more information at 214-828-9500, extension 227, or extension 233. For more information, go to KNON.org and click on the Run Spots on KNON page. It's a great way for your business to support community radio while letting more people know about you.